Welcome to Beyond the Magic, a place where secrets aren't exposed, but stories are. Every 2 weeks, we sit down with magicians from around the world, from rising stars to legendary names, to explore the minds behind the miracles. This isn't about learning tricks, it's about meeting the people who make us believe in them. This is Beyond the Magic.
Welcome back to Beyond the Magic, the show where we sit down every 2 weeks with the world's most fascinating magicians to uncover the stories, secrets, and sparks behind their art. Guys, today I'm so excited because we have a guest that I've been so incredibly honored and excited to bring on. This is someone really busy, and I'm really glad that they've had the time to come on over here today. And lots of you guys were asking in the last episode, who is going to be next? So we are so honored to bring someone who's an award-winning magician, an award-winning performer, a creator behind some of the most clever effects in modern magic, someone who's consulted for TV, stage, and even the upcoming Now You See Me Free or Now You See Me Don't movie. You've seen him break down so much movie magic for Vanity Fair and so many other places. He's packed theaters across the globe, and maybe you've even had your pocket picked by him in live, in real life. It's none other than the incredible Ben Seidman. I'm so excited. Hello, Ben. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing awesome. Great to talk to you.
Thank you so much for being here. This is so much fun. We met you in Blackpool. This is such an exciting thing because Blackpool is the biggest magic convention in the world this year. Was that your first time you've ever attended Blackpool?
Oh, yeah. Definitely the first time I've ever been to Blackpool, gone to the convention, and it was a wild ride. I'm glad I got to do my show and lecture. It was amazing, but it was, it's a lot. There's so much going on. It's overwhelming, but it was really exciting to meet lots of nice people and also catch up with some friends from the UK that I don't get to see very often.
That's incredible. That's amazing. Well, I think the best way is just to start right in with a first question. And I think this is the general one we give everybody. But I am personally very curious because you've been performing so much. You've been consulting so much. You've been doing so many different areas and fields across the whole world of magic. But I am curious, how did this all start? Let's start at the beginning. Like, what made you realize that magic, this is what I want to do? Like, this is something I want to make a career out of. How did that all happen?
I was about, 16 years old. I was in high school and doing a lot of theater, which I continued to do through college. And my first magic mentor, Tim Catlett, said to me, "Hey, if you want to do this for real, you should probably go to Vegas." And I think it was in that conversation that I thought, like, oh yeah, that's right. Do I want to do this for real? Like, that is a choice to make an attempt at that. And so I think in that moment, I both decided, like, yeah, maybe I want to try going to Vegas, but also, like, yeah, what if I did try to make this my job, make this my career? Because I had thought, oh, that maybe would be possible. But early on, when I first got into magic, I didn't know that you could actually, like, be a magician in a weird way. Like, it just seemed so, far away, the idea of making a living as a magician. No, that's for the people I've seen on TV or for the few people I've heard of, even the, like, couple of local pros in Milwaukee where I grew up. It just didn't seem achievable. But in that moment, in that conversation, I think there was that spark of possibility.
No, that's incredible. I mean, that's such a story. And how long have you been in magic for?
Oh, well, I'm 40 years old now. So I've been doing it for a long time. I mean, I think I got really pretty serious about it as a teenager, and then, like, actually started pursuing it as a career when I was in high school and mostly college, I think, when I was like, oh God, how do I actually do this, make a living? Like, that was always the goal. The goal was always, can I make a living doing magic? I mean, it's crazy to look back and say, like, oh, I accomplished that goal.
Yeah, that's
time to set new goals. And I found a list of things that I wanted to do in my life and career not too long ago that I'd written when I was probably close to your age.
Wow.
And it was cool to see, like, oh yeah, all of these have been checked off. Like, time to set some new goals. And that happened, like, years ago. So yeah, it's been a wild ride.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Having a list. I think that's such a cool thing to have, like, a list when you're younger and see if you can achieve that. I think that inspires you, motivates you. And that itself is motivational and inspiring. Thank you, Ben, for sharing that. I think it's interesting because there's the magic side, right? But then it's interesting, and maybe you can tell us a little bit more, whether there's the realm of pickpocketing, which you've entered. How does that fit into magic? Is that part of magic? Is that something different? Because clearly you've done a lot of different, you've actually had 3 videos in Vanity Fair. That's rating movie magic, of course. But then you've had 9 levels of pickpocketing on Wired. You've had all of that. Like, first of all, tell us a little bit about that, pickpocketing in itself. And then I am also curious if you have one thing that you iconically remember that you've pickpocketed of someone that's super unique and different. I'm curious to hear about that.
Sure. Well, I always thought that the most invasive form of magic is when something vanishes from someone's person or appears on their person. I think some people see some mentalism and think like, oh, that's the top for me. I would like to achieve the ability to read someone's mind. For me, I love mentalism effects, certainly, but I really think that, like, with my style and what I gravitate towards, stuff appearing on other people is like one of the highest levels. And so, of course, like, pickpocketing is the skill set, pickpocketing and put pocketing, taking things and, you know, putting things in people's pockets without them knowing. And because it was so invasive and it just felt so amazing, I just gravitated towards it. And, you know, I had heard stories of people like Apollo Robbins and, you know, some of these other pickpockets who are no longer with us. And I just found it fascinating. I also tend to gravitate towards magic that's difficult. A lot of the magic I perform is hard to accomplish. We could dive into why that is. I think there's many reasons, but I think I really gravitate towards things that are not easy for me. So, for example, when it came to sleight of hand, I wanted to learn, like, you know, complex sleight of hand. When it came to, like, coin magic, I gravitated towards coin magic because I think coin magic is really, really hard. Compared to, you know, so you can do miracles with a deck of cards that are a little more self-working than coins. And similarly with pickpocketing, it is absurdly hard to do. I think it's probably the hardest genre, maybe. It's certainly the riskiest for many reasons in my mind. And so, yeah, I just was pulled towards it and wanted to get better at it. And by no means do I feel like I'm as good as I want to be. I feel like I get better every time I do it. And sometimes that's with successes and sometimes that's with failures. And it's part of the journey.
I love that. I remember the iconic moment at Blackpool when you, like, no one expected. People know you for that. We do. But you still didn't expect it. And it's like that moment of when it hits, that sense of surprise, which is so crucial to have in magic, was just something that really made everyone, like, the whole audience. I remember it was just silence. It was silence in awe. And you're really good at that.
Thanks,
and in
man.
Curiosity, again, is there, like, something that you recall, and the answer might be no, that was, like, something super unique? Like, what type of objects do you tend to usually, like, I'm assuming watches, but is there, what types of things you like to pickpocket? And maybe, like, in terms of difficulty, how does it go from easiest
to hardest? There's certainly things that I've stolen that I'm not able to talk about publicly, at least yet. You know, generally speaking, mostly what I get are phones, wallets, watches, like the classic things. And then, you know, when I'm doing an event where people are wearing ties, of course, stealing a tie is amazing. And I haven't stolen that many belts in my life, but I've stolen some, and those are great. You know, what people have in their pockets, like, it could be anything. And you are taking a risk by finding out. So, like, a lot of magicians will ask me for advice on the pickpocketing. And it's really hard to give advice because you have to just give just pages and pages of disclaimers that really start and end with, don't do this. It's a bad idea. Like, trust me, you don't want to do this. I remember Apollo had either said to me, I can't remember if he said it to me in a conversation or if I read it in an interview or heard it in a podcast, but talking about how difficult, or rather dangerous, it can be pickpocketing. And I thought, dangerous. Come on. Like, what's the worst thing that could happen? He was right. It can be problematic. It can be dangerous. And so, yeah, it, like I always say, do it at your own risk, and also like, don't do it. It's a bad idea. It's really, you really have to be prepared to get yourself out of some very bad situations if you're going to do it.
I can imagine. Yeah, for sure. But again, it's really inspiring. I have a lot of friends who always ask me like, well, they don't ask me, I don't know anything about it, but they tell me how they want to enter that. And it's just so curious because it's, so would you think it's like an element of magic? Like, do you think in the pickpocketing itself, what makes it magic? I'm curious about that. Like, I'm sure there's lots of elements.
Yeah, the idea of, if I put a coin in your hand and you open your hand and it's gone, it's amazing, right? It's a magic trick.
Yeah.
Taking someone's watch off without them knowing can achieve the same effect, right? Like a thing vanished. Sure. Now with pickpocketing, it's not really like, well, how did that vanish? You know how it vanished. It was stolen. But the fact that you didn't see it or feel it feels very magical.
No, for sure. That's amazing. Well, it's interesting because we have the pickpocketing side, and you also mentioned you'd like to do really challenging magic. But at the same time, so in terms of releasing things, you've had some quite powerful things, and I'm going to be purely honest with you. This trick right here, permanent record, is my number one go-to card effect because I'm a mentalist and I don't always love using cards, but if I do use cards, I like to give it the mentalism approach, right? So with this, it's so interesting because it's not necessarily mentalism because you have a visual element, but I present it that way. And I think the subtleties you go through it is incredible. And anybody who's listening, I'm talking about permanent record, and it's absolutely incredible. And then you also have the Oracle system, which is taken, you can take it in two ways, right? You can make it something absolutely powerful where people can genuinely show their emotions, whether it's through crying in the, you know, happiness, you know, showing like positive ways of that. Or you can make a neutral, really strong, I think you call it warm reading, not cold reading, right? So I'm just so curious, in that process of releasing tricks like that, how do you go through that creative process? Like, you have something so serious, and then you have this really, like, I guess, a self-working card effect that's really visual, which you don't have to use the gimmick deck. There's so much. I'm curious for everything. Tell us. It's really interesting.
Sure. I mean, is your bottom line question, what do I decide to release and what do I not?
In a way, yes. Like, your creative process, like, because you have so many different styles of magic clearly here. How do you go about that?
Okay, yeah, great. So first of all, I said I gravitate towards really difficult material. That's not necessarily what I publish. You know, some of the material I develop is really difficult. Some of it's not. Permanent record, for example, is the easiest trick in the world. It can be done completely self-working, basically. So just because there's something I've published doesn't mean that it is difficult. That is just kind of like, when I say difficult, I mean what I gravitated towards early on in my development as a magician. And now when I try to create effects and solve problems, I'm not looking for the most difficult solution. Usually I'm looking for the easiest solution, but I'm looking for the easiest solution that will achieve the goal that I want it to. And sometimes that easiest solution is very difficult or complex. So it's the best tool for the job. Like, what is the job? What are you trying to do? What is the best tool to use to accomplish that job? I think Bob Kohler first said that to me. And if you don't know Bob Kohler, like, Bob's a legend. But yeah, like, what is the tool for the job? So, when it comes to releasing things and what I choose, I've released things for different reasons over the years. When I first released Eye Vanish, an effect where a coin disappears into an eyeball, you take a coin, hold it like a monocle, rub it, it vanishes into your eye. When I first came up with that, you know, many, many years ago, and I released it because it was my first thing. I just wanted to release something. And this was one of the more creative things I had developed at that time. And then later on, I put out this coin vanish called Alchemy. And I released that because JB had started Theory 11 relatively recently, and we had just been talking about it, and it just seemed like a cool thing to try. And also it was a little bit of a flex because it's a really difficult coin move. Like, Alchemy is insanely hard. And I kind of liked the idea of saying to the Magic community, here's this cool trick, but also, like, I can do it. So I think there was ego tied up in that, not in necessarily the best, healthiest way, but also there are people who do love and use that trick. There are some coin magicians now who are way, way better at coin magic than I am, who have said to me, oh yeah, when I was 17, I got Alchemy, and that really, like, helped me develop my style. So that makes me feel good. And then, like, I took a break from releasing anything because I was focused on performing and developing my own material. And then Oracle System, I wanted to put out the tarot card routine. I decided that was going to be my first publication after 10 or so years. And I wanted to put that out just because, A, enough people had asked me for it, asked me for permission to do it. B, it's a very different style effect than the performer who I'm known as on stage in many ways. And so it seemed interesting to me to put out an effect that people would say, oh, that doesn't seem like Ben at all, even though that is a facet of my performance character when I am performing, but it is the close up, serious, I want to mess people up style, which is slightly different than the on stage, we're all having fun, I'm trying to make people laugh a mile a minute style. I've always thought funny on stage, strong close up.
And that's a really powerful message.
It's how I feel, but I want to say I also want to be funny close up, and being strong on stage is insanely important to me. In fact, that might even be more important. But that was sort of my philosophy early on. And so I developed Oracle System as a, like, no, this is serious. This is going to be like an emotional thing about the spectators. And when I started performing it, it became clear that it was a banger. And yeah, I guess enough people asked me that, I wanted to share it. And so, like, as you see with every publication, there's a different reason. Permanent Record, it just seemed like it would be silly not to share it with the Magic community. That felt to me more like giving back, because there are magicians at so many skill levels. And here's the thing that literally anyone can do. Like, it doesn't matter what your skill level is, you can rock the room with that trick. And so it felt like a gift to give the Magic community. And that's why I put that out. And then most recently, the book, Principles of Destruction. Yes. I put that out because I just felt like it achieves one of the highest levels of power and reaction from my audiences. And I just, like, I don't know, those techniques helped me level up and, like, destroy people's brains. And I was like, well, how can I share that with people so that people who want to achieve a higher level of amazement on stage can. And also, there's so many close-up magicians who want to be able to do stage, who want to be able to do parlor, and a lot of the traditional stage magic can feel antiquated. So here's this thing that's insanely strong, insanely powerful. Like, what is the trick that I would have loved when I was 17 trying to become more of a stage magician as a close-up guy? And that is kind of like that gift. And it's a three-phase routine. The first phase is incredibly complicated to build and make and set up if you want to do it. So I always tell people, yes, that's in the book for completion, but it's phases 2 and 3 that are really the meat of the effect. And also, you can learn those and go out and perform them with basically not making anything. There's no arts and crafts. You just swap out a different first phase. And I give ideas for very simple first phases. Like, the meat of that routine is really, really phase 2 and phase 3. And that comes back to what I was talking about before. It is making something appear on someone's person across the room. And it's doing so in a way that doesn't use traditional pickpocketing and put pocketing in a way that is difficult and would scare people. This is much easier. So yeah, that just seemed like, it seemed like the best of both worlds. I get to give the gift that I would have wanted to receive when I was trying to become more of a stage magician. And also, like, I'd never put out a book, so it seemed like a fun little challenge and experiment to see, like, what is it like writing a book?
Yeah, the journey itself, right? Writing is probably very interesting to you and your perspective. But the book itself, for sure, it's something really powerful, because you don't see a lot in books that you have one, it's not a series of effects, but you have one strong, powerful routine with three phases, and they all have this crazy different styles, and then you have that realities that you create, and it's all just so unique. And I remember your lecture in Blackpool and the show, when people saw that, it was something completely different. When you told us how you went about making all of that happen, when I heard the realities term, and I won't go into it too much, of course, but it shook me. It was so different. It was so unique. So I'm sure writing that book and the whole journey through that must have been so great and unique for sure.
Here's what I've done with my last at least three big releases: Oracle System, Permanent Record, Principles of Destruction. What I've tried to do is put out a trick that's, my goal is to put out a trick that's a 10, just like a great trick.
For sure.
But beyond that, my goal is to give the viewer, listener, reader tools, and tools that will make them better magicians. And that is a, like, I feel like that is an easy thing to say, like, oh, watch this, it'll make you a better magician. Like, no, like, Permanent Record, for example, it has two subtleties on there that I feel like are just insanely powerful and worth way more than the price of the trick just to learn these little bits if you are serious about magic. And yeah, you can buy the trick and just get good at a great trick and have an awesome trick in your arsenal. But I wanted each product to be a bit of a masterclass in a specific thing. And for me, that's like, A, it's giving more value. B, it's just sharing and hopefully making magicians who want to buy something from me better. And like that is my goal, right? If I can help people on their journey get better, then I'm doing the Lord's work, because I learned from some of the greats in the world. I'm so blessed to have incredible mentors and to have read the books of the greats before me, who like formed me into the person who I am, both in magic and in life. So yeah, I'm trying to give those gifts, because I still receive those gifts daily, right? I still will call Eric Mead and ask him a question and walk away feeling like, oh, I learned something from one of the great magicians alive. That's how I felt sitting with Max Maven. Every time we would, you know, we would have lunch together before he passed. And I feel that way about like my friends and peers. Like when I talk to Jared Kopf, when I talk to David Gerard, who I talk to almost every single day, like I feel like I have gained wisdom and knowledge and I'm a better person and performer from those conversations. So the idea is, if I have anything to give, how can I give that to other magicians? Just like I've received gifts from the people around me.
That's beautiful. That really is. That's such a powerful message. And I also love that you mentioned the subtleties and stuff you give. And you described it as a masterclass. I couldn't agree more. With Oracle System, you receive a masterclass. I think the more interesting part is, because once you learn the method, that's one thing, right? You can learn that fairly quickly with practice, but that you give so much more. With Permanent Record, my favorite part, I can't agree more, is that the subtleties, I can't actually see myself not putting in the subtleties you teach, because I think that's what really makes it stand out. And I just love that you do that. And I think that's those little touches, they're so pivotal in any magic. And thank you for doing that with your releases. And it's good to see good magic really made thoughtfully, thought about, you know, before putting out. And you don't see that too often in the magic world today.
Thanks, man. And at the risk of at the risk of breaking the flow, I just want to say, like, I don't think I'm all that. I think I have a long way to go to get good at magic. Like, it is a lifelong goal to be really good. And so I'm not claiming that I'm like, anytime someone says like, it gives me a lot of compliments, it is so kind and so nice. But I just want to clarify and say, like, I feel like I'm on the ride and I have a long way to go and I'm just trying to get better. So if, you know, if I can share some of where I am with the people around me to help make them better, awesome. But I by no means feel like I'm a grand master or teacher, or someone even worth listening to. I just like, I do what I do. And, I hope that I get better. And if I can help people along the way, great.
But that in itself is great because it shows that you have a passion for magic. And that's what I feel like a magician should have. It should be magic first, like sharing that passion, sharing that love. And if you can be doing that for a living, then that's just a bonus. That's something incredible to have. So it's super cool to hear that. Very inspiring too. I want to take a different step because we've talked about magic. We talked about creating magic, but then there's the element that not many magicians do, which I really love to hear about consulting wise. There's TV, there's movies, and then there's real life live performances, right? So I am curious, and especially with the new Now You See Me Free film, which I'm also very curious to hear about, whatever you can share about it, of course. What's the difference between like real life live shows and creating magic for TV? Like, how does that differ?
Oh my God, they're so dissimilar. creating magic for a live environment and creating magic on screen are two different beasts for so many reasons. And one, of course, is just the frame of reference, right? When you're looking at this screen, I can't misdirect you in the way that I might be able to misdirect someone in real life, right? If you're watching a camera, watching a screen where someone's on camera, you can take advantage of less when it comes to like directing the attention of the eyes. And furthermore, there is the rewind problem, which is one of the best methods in magic is that once something happens, you can't see it again. It's done. We've moved forward in time and space. And with something that exists on video, that is the opposite. You can always go back and rewatch. So, you know, when developing something for on camera, the more you can clean up and, you know, the more ways you can shift methods so that you're not relying on physical, traditional misdirection techniques, the better. Because if you don't, then you're vulnerable to someone just watching something on YouTube being like, that's cool. Hold on. Let me go back. Oh, that's how it works. And that is unavoidable to some extent, but I try to make things on camera as airtight as possible, just like we try to do that in real life. So the methods can be very, very different. In that same way, you can take advantage of the fact that the eye of the camera is moving, right? That can also be gamed. And you know, sometimes it's gamed in a way that I think is very fair and fine. And sometimes you see performers do it where you're like, oh, that's cheating. Everyone kind of has their own definition of what that is. I'm kind of old school in a way when it comes to that, which is that like I have an idea of what I think cheating is and what I think it isn't. But I think one of the best techniques to zoom out and look at that is this something that I can recreate and perform in real life and have it look the same to the spectators there? Because if you do something, in my opinion, if you can change a method to make it more airtight on camera, but have it look exactly like and have the exact same experience for the people watching that a live audience would have, then I feel like you're, you know, it's pretty fair. Now, obviously, you don't want to just have like, you don't want to use stooges all the time or use CGI all the time. Like that stuff is like, it's just not as fun, right?
No,
But I think that a good way to look at it is to say like, how can I achieve the same effect that I would live? And that's, you know, that was one of the concepts that that the director for the Now You See Me 3 had is like, he wanted as much practical magic as possible. Because, you know, I think people liked the first movies and said like, yeah, the magic was super cool, but like, you know, a lot of it's CGI or all of it's CGI. This is all just what people said, you know, things that I've read online or heard people say. And so his concept was, well, what if it was all practical? And I haven't seen the cut yet, so I don't know how much of it is practical and how much of it was tweaked, right? Because even though we developed all of these practical methods and taught the actors them and performed them using practical things, it's possible that we'll look and say like, oh, maybe they tweaked something in post for some reason. Like, I don't know.
Sure.
But the concept was essentially use as much practical as possible, actually teach the actors, like put them through the boot camp.
That's interesting. Wow.
Yeah, it's that's not an easy thing, of course.
No, like, they're actors. They're not magicians. It takes time to learn magic.
This was my mantra through the whole process, which is a thing I had forgotten. Magic is hard. And I forgot that because there are certain things that when I learn them, they are just, they inherently make sense, both in my hands and in my body. And that's just not the case if you haven't been doing magic for a while. Even as a hobbyist, like you develop certain instincts that you don't have if you have no practice. So, taking someone who's not a magician and turning them into a magician in a month is not an easy thing.
No.
It was both developing the magic and teaching it to the actors were two very different things. And they would combine when we would develop something and then it wouldn't really fit for that actor because of the time they had to rehearse or the way their hands or body moved or, like level of commitment and practice is one thing, but also they have big things to worry about. You know, they're doing stunts and like memorizing lines and on set, and we're all in Budapest, and like there's so many different factors here. So when we developed effects for that movie and also methods for that movie, we had to take all of these things into account.
Perfect. Thank you so much. It's just such an interesting, it's a whole different world that, you know, we don't always get to see when we see a movie. So it's really,
yeah. And I also want to pause before we go on and just to like shout out all of those actors. Like each and every one of those people who I worked with were just incredible and the sweetest, nicest, greatest people. And so insanely talented. Like it was really amazing to get to see some of those actors in their element. And then on top of that, getting to see them like perform magic that we had been working on together.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
That must be incredible. Like to see an actor do that. Thanks for saying that. And I'm sure they'd appreciate that. This is interesting because again, going to another concept, magic, we talked about consultancy, we've talked about releasing, but within like presentationally speaking, right, you have magic and then storytelling is a huge part of magic. Your personality that I've seemed to notice, especially on stage, is, and as you said, it's like very funny, very funny. In fact, everybody couldn't stop laughing at Blackpool, and every time you see you on Penn and Teller, whether it's on TV, everywhere, stand-up storytelling and magic seem to be like, maybe in my eyes, your big three things. I'm curious to see, like, how do you balance that? Like, how do you balance comedy and magic?
Yeah, great question. First of all, how I balance comedy and magic is going to be different from how you do or how anyone else does. This is, again, we're all on our own journeys. And I see both people who could use more humor and it would suit them. And I also see people who are trying to be funny because they think that's what magic is. They think that being a comedy magician is what they're supposed to do. People fall into the traps of using jokes, like existing magic jokes or using jokes that other magicians have used because it's easier to steal someone's joke or use a hack joke than it is to write one. And people will fall into that trap sometimes, much to the detriment to their own abilities and career, because you really kind of cut your legs off if you're doing that, because because people don't develop that far when they're doing that. Look, early on when you're new and a kid and finding your voice, most comedians or magicians will like kind of take on someone else's persona in a way, whether it's consciously or usually unconsciously. Like, you know, there was a generation of people who were all doing Dave Attell for a while, in the same way that there was a generation of people who did Mitch Hedberg, in the same way that there were a generation of people who did, you know, insert comedy magician's name here. Look, I always have liked comedy, and it's always been an important element for my performances. It's also who I am. Like, I think in real life, I'm always looking for the joke. And I love the feeling of laughing, and I love the feeling of getting a laugh. And you know, that feeds my soul in a similar way to giving people the feeling of amazement. It just like gives me juice. And so, yeah, it's just always been an important part of it for me. And so I write jokes down. Like, people ask me, how do I get better at comedy? It's like, well, write down all your thoughts. When something funny happens to you, write it down. Keep a notebook, look through it, see what is interesting, what is funny. Workshop ideas just in conversation and see what plays as funny and what doesn't. And then when you have a little nugget where there's something there, something that makes you angry or something that's interesting inherently, or something that makes you feel some sort of strong emotion, like, oh, then pull that thread and see where it goes.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. And that's such good, strong advice that anybody could do. Because comedy is hard. It's not because people all have their kind of taste to comedy. Someone will find this funny, someone will find this funny. But again, that could be applied to anything, even magic in itself and movies and all sorts. So I'm great you mentioned that. Thank you.
I think also the storytelling balance, I say this because that is another question I get a lot from magicians. It's like, I want to be a storyteller like you. And I have to say, like, cool, great, happy to hear that. Let me tell you my experiences. Sometimes the stories in my show, I can't do because they wouldn't really work. Sometimes I'm performing at an event where the stand-up comedy about religion would be inappropriate. And I've learned that even if it's okay, even if I'm not going to have an upset client, maybe the show's not going to be as good because I told a story when it wasn't the right context. The flower story, which is a central part of my like normal hour, that story is sometimes people's favorite part of the show and the thing really that they remember and talk about. And sometimes I have learned if I do that story, it is going to take 40 to 45% of the momentum out of the show and actually kind of spoil the vibe. So it just depends on the context. So there's a difference between performing at a corporate event and performing at a theater and performing at a college and performing at a private party and performing on a cruise ship. Like, all of these things are very, very different. And so I always say it's important to know what works in what environment and when to cut something, when to abandon it in the middle of it. And storytelling is the biggest example of that, I feel, because some audiences are completely drawn in by the stories, and some context it's like, we don't care, man, get to the magic, you're here to break our brains. And the same thing with comedy, like, why is this guy telling jokes? He's never going to be as funny as the comedian that I just watched on Netflix the other day. So it's like, amaze me or quit your BS.
That's so it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, you can never please everybody, but I love that you should understand the context. I think that's the most important thing. Know your environment, know where you are, and then maximize the amount of people or everybody that you can entertain, right? Because that's what it is, entertainment overall, right?
So, yeah, I mean, it depends on what you're trying to deliver as well, right? Like, I just saw my friend Christian Cadigal, who I haven't seen in a while. He's very much a storytelling magician. And it, like, when you see Christian, you feel like you are there for the stories. And then the magic is a part of that. And then there are certain magicians that, you know, you might see and say, like, oh, this guy is just like, this guy watched Delgadio's show and now he thinks he's, you know, a storyteller. And it's bad. So, like, you have to decide who you are, what you're trying to deliver, where you're performing, what you want to give people, and what your audience might want to receive, and then figure out where on that gauge individual performance might fall. That's if you're performing. And if you're just developing, just try anything and everything and see what works.
Perfect. That's amazing. Well, just before we wrap this up with the last, so we have the last two questions. I am curious, very importantly, what are you up to now? So you're performing a lot constantly. And where is the future for Ben Simon looking like? That's what interests me right now. So tell us, please.
Right now, I am focusing on my health. I'm focusing on trying to be the person who I want to be, both in my body and in my mind.
Perfect.
And right now, I am focusing on this new show that I wrote that is, I think, going to be the best thing I've ever done. And I've only done it 18 times so far. I've done it in 3 different cities, in venues ranging from 70 seats at the smallest to 275 at the biggest. And I would like to share that show with more people. But I've spent the last, I don't know, however many years doing the type of magic that I have been doing, which is, like, commercially speaking, performing at events where people show up and there's magic, like a corporate event, or people, you know, back in the day, years ago, when I performed on cruise ships, people would go like, yeah, let's go see the entertainment. And that's very different than people buying a ticket to see a theater show. So I am learning. I'm learning how to do this. And amazing. Right now, the thing that excites me most is this show, getting to share it with people and continuing to develop it. Because I do think it's the best thing that I've ever done so far. And I would like to figure out how to do it more for more people.
That's so cool. I'm really excited for you, and I really wish you the best of success with that. This really sounds fun. What is the name of the show, by the way?
The name just changed. I did 18 performances of it called Good Charlatan. I'm currently in the process of choosing a new name. And I am only given comfort in the fact that a show that I really, really love started out being called one thing, and then they changed the name pretty late in the game. So I'm given comfort knowing that that I'm not alone in that. But choosing a title is difficult.
I can imagine. Yeah, perfect. Well, we have this really interesting tradition here on the Beyond the Magic podcast, and this is only episode 2. So we just had episode 1 guest, Rafferty Coop. It was super amazing. And he's given you a question. We do something where he gives you a question, and then for the next guest, you can come up with one for them. So right. You have no idea what this question is. Let's see what they thought. The question is, it's a really interesting one, actually. What's a piece of advice that you wish someone had told you when you were starting to take your magic to a professional level?
My gut is that I wish that someone, when I was younger, had said, relax.
Wow.
I tend to be pretty wound up and anxious as a person, like as my general default. And I think that applied in my development of magic, which on the plus side, I think made me very compulsive about getting as good as I could. But on the negative side, also like really like gave me a lot of tightness in my like brain and body. And so I think that I would have loved the advice like, hey man, relax. If it's meant to be, it's gonna be a thing. And if it's not meant to be, then it's not meant to be. So like quit your worrying, you know, that old idea of, don't worry about what you can't change, because if you can change it, then change it. And if you can't change it, then you can't. I think I wish I had gotten that advice earlier on, and then also really embodied it and understood it. And I'm also telling that to myself now.
I absolutely adore that. That is the perfect way to wrap this up. And I really hope that anybody that's been listening to this, whether on YouTube, Spotify, wherever, that you found some value out of this, because I personally have. I've had such a great time, Ben. This has been full of incredible little golden nuggets. This has been such an inspirational episode here today, and I cannot thank you more than enough for your time, for being
Wait,
here.
Wait, YouTube? Spotify? I thought this was a private conversation. This can't go anywhere.
You're amazing. You're absolutely amazing. We appreciate it so much. And I really hope everybody that's been watching has enjoyed. Please let us know in the comments what you thought. And Ben, once again, thank you so much. Massive round of applause to you. You've been amazing.
Thanks, man. It was great to have this conversation. And thanks for making me organize my office so that, you know, my background was... Thanks.
Thank you so much. And we'll see you guys in the next episode of Beyond the Magic.
Keep being magic, everyone!